Hello, everyone. I'm Jake DeLorco, Dean of Enrollment at the Loomis Chaffey School. Our admission team is proud to share this thoughtful content created by former Dean of Enrollment, Amy Thompson. While Amy has transitioned from her role at Loomis, her voice and insights continue to reflect the vibrant life and culture of our school. If what you hear resonates with you, we'd love to continue the conversation. Please don't hesitate to reach out to our admission office. We're here to help you explore all that Loomis has to offer. And now, enjoy.
I'm really excited to be here today speaking with a very special guest, the chair of our History, Philosophy, and Religious Studies department, Mr. Eric LaForest. And one of the reasons why I'm excited about this conversation, we were talking about before we went on air that Eric was actually our second guest in Genuine Admissions long ago. Eric, when you were teaching in the history department, but also you were the director of the Norton Center for the Common Good. And so it's so wonderful to have you back many episodes later in this particular role, which I know you've held for a while. So we're going to get into it. I also want to point out, of course, you are a former teacher of the year, I believe, as well as many other things on campus, have taught my own children. So we're going to have a great time today talking about your department. So thank you so much for taking the time to come and talk to all of our prospective families about what happens in the Department of History, Philosophy, and Religious Studies. So first, I just would love to have you talk a little bit about you and just your various roles that you've had at Loomis over the time that you've been here and just a little bit about yourself with the audience.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Amy, and happy to be back. I don't know if we do a 5-episode club or something like SNL, but I don't know if I get any sort of special chair or anything if I come back a few more times.
Maybe next time.
Okay. But yeah, I'm in my 12th year here at the school, and I'm a proud first-gen college student. And after going to grad school for a bit, became a teacher and have held various roles at the school. One of my more successful roles was as the assistant JV baseball coach for a number of years.
I can't believe I forgot to point that out, Eric.
I know.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a great run. And have also taught a variety of upper level history courses here at the school. I started as an APUSH teacher, and now I teach college level US history to juniors, as well as a few other senior electives, and have advised the student council. And as you said, I was the director of the Norton Center for 6 years, and now happily in my 3rd year as the chair of this department. And also really enjoy laughing at Neil Shottery's jokes. That's an official role I have here at school. So.
And Neil was on, some of you may recall, was on a podcast earlier this year as the chair representing the science department. Yeah. So that's important to know.
I take that part of my job seriously.
Excellent.
So. And yeah, I am thrilled to be here, and I'm happy to answer whatever questions you have about the department.
Excellent. Thank you so much for taking the time. So I would love to just start out with really just talking kind of 30,000 foot level about the department. And I always start these conversations with our department chairs in reading back to you what is on the website that our prospective families are reading about the department, because I think that it's important to kind of start there. And on the department website, we state the following, and I love these three short sentences. First, we ask questions, we challenge assumptions, we seek justice and joy in our learning. And so I would love to actually just even start with those three things. So let's just dive right into that.
Sure. And I think one thing that's important to my colleagues and me in the department is that students come into Loomis with certain assumptions about what history is, how it's taught, how it has been taught to them, had been taught to them at previous schools, what they hear about it in the news. And I think that this is probably true in a lot of classes, but in our classes in particular, students come in expecting a certain thing about what history includes or doesn't. And we love to disrupt that with our courses. Mm-hmm. And so that's what maybe that those first two statements mean, that we ask questions. We want our students to be asking lots of questions. We enjoy not answering their questions immediately and letting them get lost in that inquiry a little bit and develop the tools, the skills they need to be able to not just answer their own questions, but start to ask better questions. We also think that history can't only be disruptive, disturbing, full of things that upset us. And so we want also for our students to approach real history, hard history, with a sense of excitement about their discovery, about their development as thinkers, as members of the school community, or as citizens in society. And so, yeah, we think this discipline in particular is well suited, as well as philosophy and religious studies, and helping improve society. We also want students to have a sense of fun and play some games, maybe take some risks in the classroom and not feel as if it's all drudgery and it's all sort of the sepia-toned sadness of the past.
Yeah, so I love that focus that you're kind of talking about in terms of the joy, right? That word joy in learning. Can you talk a little bit more about the word justice that you use in that sentence? How do you interpret that in terms of the department and the goals of the department?
Well, I'm in my third year as chair and my 12th year as a member of the department. I'm really fortunate to be surrounded by colleagues who have been at the school as long as I have or even longer, and some other newcomers who, you know, bring new energy. And mm-hmm. I think we'd all define that word a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of creative tension in our department meetings and our cohort meetings drives us to teach in different ways. And that's one of the great parts of teaching at this school, is that we were given the freedom to, you know, design courses that evolve, that meet the moment. And so I don't want a static definition of that necessarily, but I think in the 3 years that I've been chair, I think there's been increased focus on what a justice-oriented education should be at schools like ours. And we've really wanted to embrace that and center that in the time that we spend as a department, developing as teachers, the time that we ask our students to spend with sources. So having inclusive classrooms, I think, is a prerequisite to having classes that raise questions about justice in society. Those big questions, I think, aren't possible without a sense of belonging in the classroom. And, you know, I'm sure you've heard that from other department chairs, that we really want our students to see themselves and what they're learning, and also to be exposed to other kinds of people and other kinds of stories, and to have opportunities to rethink some of their assumptions about who an American is, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's been a point of emphasis for me as a leader of the department. I would say it comes up in terms of what we're seeking as in our balance of being intellectually challenging and academically supportive. I think we have a number of CL courses, college level courses, advanced courses, and those sort of simulate a college classroom, but we want also our students to succeed and to feel like they can do it. And so I think that emphasis on justice is possible when you feel like, you know, you don't have to be perfect to already perfect in order to flourish. I think we want to teach all kinds of students and let them discover that through the process of their learning.
Excellent. You know, I'm really glad that you delved into that the way that you did, because it so much reflects, first of all, what we're trying to accomplish here in the admissions office in terms of building the type of community that we want to build at the school. And the fact that, you know, what you're talking about with also just the faculty in your department, and the fact that not everyone would even define that term necessarily in the same way, is reflective of the fact that we're trying to bring in students to sit around that Harkness table and have a lot of different types of conversations from different types of backgrounds that they're coming from. So in context and leaning into that experience. And we're looking for students certainly who want to do that, right? Who want to engage, where they can really lean into learning something new and becoming educated about the world in a way in which they didn't anticipate. And you mentioned at the beginning curriculum in terms of what we're offering. I'd love you to talk a little bit more specifically about that. If we can dive into curriculum, you know, we do have students who come in who know already, I love history and I love the idea of big ideas, right? Through philosophy classes, religious studies classes, everything that the department offers. We also have students who come in and see something like philosophy and they start to get a little itchy, or, you know, or they think history and they think boring. I mean, no offense, but, you know, that there are some students for whom it's not something that has kind of like gotten their juices flowing. So I would love for you to talk a little bit about how we as a department are trying to work across a wide range in terms of our curricular offerings and the way that we teach history at Loomis and those other areas.
Great question. I think that's at the center of what we ask ourselves when we talk as teachers about, you know, how we seeking relevance. It can be a bit of a dilemma sometimes. You know, I think it can, you know, the pendulum can swing and it can be hard to keep up. But I do think that we have a professional mandate to meet our students where they are and to shift some of our emphasis based on what's happening in the world. And I think that's one way our discipline can contribute to conversations at all levels of society. And so one of the really fortunate things about our approach is that that's well suited for this is that we have a real emphasis on the craft of history, for instance, or how to think about religion or philosophy. And so it's less about doing well on a game show or something and more about how to think. And so we really want our students to graduate with a certain set of skills. And I think also now of the sort of ascendancy of generative AI. And so how important it is to be able to prioritize human skills. And that's just informs our approach every year as we take a close look at what we do and why. And so that emphasis on the craft and on student choice and flexibility within the curriculum. So we have a number of classes that most especially our core classes, so our ninth grade world history course and our 11th grade American history courses, all incorporate what I'd say is project-based learning. So there are shared experiences and skill development, and also then students can take things that they're interested in and pursue those.
Okay. So knowing that I'm imagining somebody's listening to this in their car or something, and they're saying, okay, that all sounds great. But are there particular examples you can give about that are going on in the department that are units that are being taught or projects or the way that students are able to do more project-based learning?
Yeah. I mean, I teach, as I said, college level US history. And so I know that course well. And I think one thing that we're really proud of is the sort of backward design of ending with a research paper and say, all right, we want our students before they become seniors to have the ability to write a full paper from beginning to end of 12 pages or so and know how to do that on their own. And so in order to get to that point, they have to have lots of little, I used to say that that's sort of like the Horcruxes from whatever, what's the thing that
Harry Potter,
there we go.
Yes.
And so it's just sort of scattered about the whole course. And so by the time we get to April, they put it all together and they can do that. So one project that course did in the fall was think about antebellum United States. So the decades before the Civil War, what is a topic that they think would be made into a film? And what's a story that could be told ethically, equitably, that would shed light on this time period that, you know, most Americans haven't really studied closely. And so students just took that and ran with it. They went in all sorts of directions and they were able to take something that they cared about already, whether that's religion or sports or racial justice or environment, and find that in that history and then develop their skills along the way. And we as teachers are watching them do this and helping them do this and thinking, this is the perfect dress rehearsal for the big paper that awaits them.
So knowing that, that's an excellent example for someone who gets super interested in a particular area that they might want to pursue further. I know that we offer some guided research opportunity in humanities for students who, once they hit their senior year, they really want to dive into a particular area. Am I right about that?
That's right.
So can you give a little bit of information about how that particular program works?
Yeah, I think we do have a number of sophomore courses that students can take, and some of which are advanced, but I think really by the time they become seniors, they have a whole menu of options of college level courses, all of which involve some of this project-based learning with some flexibility and choice. But yeah, our Guide to Humanities course is a sort of crown jewel. I don't think there's another course like it at the high school level. And it doesn't just simulate a college course. It simulates the kind of course that those of us who went to liberal arts schools would have taken junior or senior year, a sort of capstone research and writing course. And it's flourishing. My colleague Karen Parsons is an expert teacher and course designer, and it's actually becoming a part of our new writing seminars program that is rolling out next year beyond the English department and looking at ways that we teach writing in different departments. I think I can say that here.
I think you can.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, you can. That was a little
teaser,
everybody.
We just voted that in on Monday.
That was a teaser, everybody. So we'll be learning more about that when we have John Morrell on our writing initiative. So we have some really exciting new courses going on next year.
And I would say could I add one more thing about that? Sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah.
That's only thinking about what happens in the classroom. And I think we have a lot of opportunities beyond the classroom where students can practice these skills and pursue things that they want to do. We have a couple of publications in the department. What's called the World Bulletin and then the Hourglass. And so those concern, global events, contemporary current events, things like that. And we have various other projects, student-led projects, one of which is a partnership with the Center for DEI, which I could tell you about if you'd like.
Yes, you've anticipated me, Eric, because I was going to ask you when you were talking about writing initiatives to talk a little bit about kind of the interdisciplinary across collaboration, because you do a lot of that within your department.
This project is one I'm a part of, as well as a few others. We've been researching the history of the school's connections to enslavement and anti-Black racism, and have been creating reports. And we took a few students to Charleston, South Carolina to do some archival research. And we have a website that we've published that's linked on our main school page. And it's this year, it just continues to grow. And that's just one example. We have all of our world history students, our ninth grade students, were down in the FI for this winter, this sort of in between Thanksgiving and winter break period. They played a game on the Silk Road, and they then had to design an expansion pack for that game. How would they improve the game? And what research would they need to complete in order to update the game? And kids loved it. I saw them down there. I heard from students and teachers that it just, the freedom of that and the excitement of that and the sort of gamification of that was really great. And I think it got some students who might have had some of these assumptions about what history class is, rethinking those assumptions. We're also involved in, thanks to the generosity of some alums, we have a fund for Holocaust education at the school. And so I work with my department works with the Norton Center for the Common Good on that. And we brought in speakers, and we have other plans this year. And obviously with the advent of AI that I mentioned, the Kravis Center has been, has hosted symposia on that. And we've been working with Matt Johnson in that center to rethink some of our assessment design and how we can positively use AI to complement some of the skill development we're doing with students.
Yes, I'm glad that you've mentioned that, because I'm sure that it's one of those things where a year ago when ChatGPT first kind of came on the media scene, I know that there was a lot of kind of panic out there. So I feel like from the beginning there was a sense of, okay, how can we use this as an educational tool? In terms of thinking about generative AI and how it intersects with the work that what you're trying to educate students to do, how do you see it as being a helpful tool in that regard, as opposed to something to battle against?
I think if anyone listens to this in a year, my answer might seem a little silly because it's getting better. And I don't know if I am as an instructor, but I think for now, at least, it seems like what some of these large language models can produce doesn't quite measure up to what historians or religious studies scholars or philosophers can produce. And asking students to see those distinctions. So having students scrutinize an essay written by ChatGPT, for instance.
Got it.
And what's missing? What grade would this get? Run it through a rubric. And that's a great way to teach writing. And because then our hope is that then when they write, they'll ask those same questions of their work. Or having students use ChatGPT as a kind of tutor, as an interlocutor to say, how would you answer this argument? Or what are objections to this? And bounce that back and refine their thinking. Actually, it helps then that ChatGPT isn't perfect, because then there are little gaps there.
It lends itself to asking those questions.
Yeah.
Right?
And teachers, I'm not really doing justice to all the variety of ways teachers have played with this. And I think like kind of laboratory feel is something that we, I think, really do really well here at Loomis.
Just to step back for a minute and talk a little bit more about just the way that we have offerings within the department. One of the things that I'd love to touch upon is the sophomore year. And as you mentioned, all of our ninth graders will take world history, or sophomores who are new, who haven't had world history yet, would be in those classes. Our juniors, of course, are taking US history. But then on kind of in those two other years, the sophomore year and the senior year, there's other opportunities for students to dive into areas of interest. But we also have these requirements, as we refer to them in Loomis lingo, PPR requirements. One of the P's and the R is related to your department, the philosophy and religious studies requirements. Now, I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about specifically kind of how those requirements work a little bit into those sophomore year offerings and senior year offerings, or other opportunities to dive deeper into, let's say, term electives, because there's many schools where as a sophomore, you wouldn't have an opportunity to just do a term elective in something. And I think, for example, about my kids who had the chance here as sophomores to do a course like Germany and the Holocaust, or they had an opportunity to do a course in philosophy like Introduction to Ethics or whatever it might be, really got their juices flowing around some of these areas. So I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Yeah. And I think for people listening to this who have a current eighth grader, I think you'll see a different model by the time that student would be enrolled here, where we've just rethought. We had a committee to reconceive of how the 10th grade will look for philosophy and religious studies students.
Aha.
And one thing we want to have tried to do is clarify some jumping off points for students. So, you know, if you have had zero experience with those subjects, have no idea even what they would look at or what their lenses would be, there's an intro to philosophy class, intro to religious studies class. Pick one. They're going to do similar things in sort of related disciplines. And then no matter which one you pick, by the time you're a junior or senior, you could take one of, I don't know, 11, 12. I should have probably looked into our course book before this interview. Some double digit number of options. And so there's this sort of shared experience. And then you can, there's a whole garden that you can explore later on. And I'd say history follows a slightly different model, where sophomore year, it's really about students who love the world history experience, or there's a subject they really want to explore, like you said, Germany and the Holocaust, or we have a history of the present course, which is a popular course in a lot of colleges that our sophomores take, a few others, like a course in the Middle East. And so I would say we also have a year-long college-level course for sophomores on European history. They have tons of options for students who want to go explore other things as sophomores and come back to us for American. I love seeing those kids come back and then they take more history senior year. You're like, okay, yep, welcome back. We kept the spot warm for you. So.
Awesome. So speaking about that then, just in terms of, because you've referenced and I've referenced a few times this idea around CL courses. And earlier when you were talking about your background, you were here before we had CL courses. You were here when we had AP courses. And you mentioned APUSH, for example, AP US History. And we've talked in other podcasts around, departmental podcasts around this shift from AP to CL. And I think in your particular department, it really kind of opened up the curriculum in ways in which perhaps we weren't even expecting. Because, you know, again, the fact that we do have term course availability and some flexibility in sophomore and senior year means that we could do more at this particular level too. So students not needing to just do, for example, a full year AP course. So I'm wondering if just you could talk a little bit from your own perspective, having been here kind of in the pre and the post, how you've seen the changes between when you were teaching, you know, AP US history versus what you're teaching now in CL US history. And just as a department chair, how you've seen that change kind of develop.
I don't know if in your other episodes you've addressed why the school more broadly.
Yeah,
sought to step away from these AP designations. But I think that's been a real plus to do that, both in terms of external sort of what we were inadvertently signaling by only having a couple kind of thing.
Right.
And I thought a lot of our non-AP advanced courses were beyond AP, you know, and I think that was that became true in history, where once we dropped that label, we could really make U.S. history, our college level U.S. history, truly college level, and in a way as best we could approximate at a high school with way more time constraints than a college, you know, college would have, but intellectually at least, and in terms of the skills and the pedagogy behind the class, we feel more like professors than we did teach when we were, you know, teaching toward the AP test. We never fully did that. We had research, the big research paper, which predated my time,
right?
But we found this, a lot of the scores after we dropped we had this transition time of like CL and AP. Mm-hmm. And in that transition time, more students were taking the APUSH exam and those scores started going up because we were teaching in this better way. In this way, the students were learning more and the skills were sticking.
Right.
And that was exciting for us. It was validating in a way, even though we didn't love what those scores always meant or what went into them. We were like, okay, this is maybe a sign that we're going in the right direction. And when I hear from my colleagues, a number of us have been teaching this course in some version together for 12 years now. We've seen it all, you know.
Yes.
We're three very different educators and we share so much in common in terms of our values. And I just love working with my colleagues on this teaching team. And I think one thing that we did lose is a kind of helpful boogeyman, like this external
to blame,
like be like, oh, you have to do this thing you don't want to do because if you don't, the scary thing awaits. And now it's like, we're the scary ones, right? And so what that's made us be is more sensitive, more balanced, more adept at addressing schedule crunches when students kind of feel like they have a lot of demands. And I think we've tried to maintain that level of rigor while also, you know, they know that we support them.
So I'm going to shift gears a little bit here and ask you to dive deep about what makes you excited about the work that you do. Why do you enjoy doing it here at Loomis Chafee? And, you know, what keeps you coming back for, you know, your 12th year, going on 13th year, teacher of the year, JV baseball coach, former dorm resident, all the things that you give the school.
We're a school where people we're asking ourselves that all the time, right? I mean, I think that's, we're fortunate to be in a line of work where we expect some purpose from our jobs. Right. And so where I find that purpose is in, I guess, two ways. One is just the relationships I've formed with my students and former students who stay in touch, and my friends and colleagues here at the school. I'm married to an ordained Episcopalian priest. And so she, you know, has a major component of her job is pastoral, you know, caring for people in times of crisis or wherever they are. And so I really see my role as department chair as one that's primarily pastoral. I'm just there to support my colleagues and listen to them and get to know them and believe in them. And that's something that gives me a lot of fulfillment as a person and that I care a lot about, that helps with the drives to and from campus. And just seeing my students' development. And I just had lunch with a student right before this and just seeing what she's getting out of the class and the challenges that she, I love it this time of year when students, you know, we have all these principles in the class, our students start to turn those around on us a little bit. And they're like, oh, but I thought you said this matters. What about now? And like, those are great moments.
Yes.
And so that really keeps me on my toes and challenged in good ways. So the people, and then I think also the job gives me just personally a chance to live out some of my values. I mentioned that I was the first-gen college student. My parents were both children of Army officers who fought in World War II in Korea, and they both married German women and moved to the United States in Georgia, where there's a big infantry base. And so I had a childhood of this like sort of Southern German mesh, and there's a lot of history to unpack in those two places, it turns out. And the Germans, I think, have done they've been forced to do a lot of historical reckoning. And there's a German word that addresses that maybe you can say it with me after I say it.
Okay.
All right. So it's Vergangenheitsaufarbeitung.
Vergangenheitsaufarbeitung.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. That was the 10th take. So she did a great job. No. And what Vergangenheit means history, the past, and Aufarbeitung means you're working through it and working it off, almost like a sculptor would chisel away at marble. And that means a lot to me just personally, given my family history and the things that I read about or think about or talk about with my friends. And so being able to go into work and like live that out means something to me and is sort of worthwhile, feels worthwhile to me.
Right. One of the things that you hit upon, I think that's so clear is this idea of course, it all goes back to the mission of Loomis, right? Everything always does that best self and common good. And the fact that you're talking about things that are related to skills, as in, you know, the ability to kind of inspire and support others, whether it's students or colleagues in your role there, but it's also personal, right? It's also content. It's also that idea of digging into the past and being inspired by the content that you're sharing with others. So it's not just about kind of what feeds your soul in terms of the work that you're doing on a daily basis, but it's also what's feeding your intellectual soul as well, or just being married kind of in this one job. So you can never leave, Eric. That's obviously clear.
All right.
Okay. So Eric, you've been doing this for quite some time. What advice would you have for families as they go through this process and they're looking at a school for their child, whether it's Loomis or elsewhere, given your various roles at the school and how you've seen students develop over their time at Loomis? What things should they be thinking about?
So I have four answers for
you. Oh, boy. Okay.
I want you to pick one. Can you pick one or two?
Oh, geez.
I have a sweet answer.
Okay.
I have an idealistic answer.
Okay.
I have an out there answer.
Oh,
and then I have a normal answer. I can share all four if you want.
I think you're going to need to share all four.
And you have to guess which one I'm sharing. No. I mean, the normal answer is just evidence of dynamism. So
that's normal.
Yeah. You want to see a department or a school that isn't stuck. That is not resting on its laurels.
Right.
That's not
always trying to be better.
It's striving in good ways, but it knows who it knows what it is, and it keeps that centered. That I think is my most basic advice.
Yes, but I think when I say it's not normal, I guess what I would say is that not every school would say that as an answer. And so it might be normal for us at Loomis.
Loomis normal. Right. Okay. Yeah. My out there answer is to ask anybody you meet at a tour or a maybe a revisit day or something, an interview, like, what's the nicest note you've received from a student?
I love that.
And what I think it'd be a little litmus test. I think it'd be like, what would come to mind? And I think we all have that little drawer in our minds of the notes that we've received or the moments we've had with students that have kept us here.
Yep.
And I wonder what they'd say. My kids are too young to. Are not old enough yet to be interviewing here or whatever, but I'm gonna save that one for a few years and see what
I'll warn their interviewer.
Yeah.
Okay.
My idealistic answer is from Shakespeare, and my mentor here is named Al Fryhofer. He started the Norton Center and was a trustee and an alum and a parent, and we've stayed in touch and we see each other a couple of times every year. And when he left the school, he left me the Norton Center, and then also a plaque with a quote from The Merchant of Venice, which said that all things that are with more spirit chased than enjoyed. And I didn't know why he did that to me at first. And as I, was trying to fill his shoes, and as I've gotten older and had kids and kind of made a career here, I've understood that quote a little more. And I think I'm thinking of it in context of advice to parents. I haven't lost the thread, Amy, I promise.
I believe you.
And I think being able to ascertain at a school, are they educating the whole person? How are they looking past some of the credentializing, the sort of the metrics that we all expect and I think we care about, we should care about. But where are they addressing the bigger picture? And not just in history or religious studies or whatever, but like writ large, like what's the evidence of schools doing that? Because I think if they're not doing that or if they're faking it, you can tell.
Excellent advice.
My sweet answer has to do with my son who's in fourth grade. And I was very fortunate to be invited by his teacher to teach a guest lesson on the civil rights movement. It was really sweet. So I had never taught fourth graders. I had taught all sorts of high school students. I had volunteer taught at a medium security prison for a couple years. And then I was here with 18 third graders. And she's now a Loomis parent. And I when I went to teach her class, I was just overwhelmed by how easy it was to see her values played out. And I was there for an hour and just seeing how those students had so much joy, had so much trust in her, had so much curiosity. And so, you know, when you see it, I was just a parent and some guy there trying my best to wrangle a bunch of eight, 9 year olds, and you just felt it. And so that's my sweet answer, I guess, is you kind of, you'll see it.
You'll know when you see it. That's right. Well, I love all four of those answers, Eric. And I've loved this conversation that we've had over the last half hour or so about the department. I think we've touched on a lot of different things. We dove deep onto many topics. And so I really appreciate your taking the time, especially during such a busy time of year. Again, thank you for coming. I hope you had fun.
Sure. I'll see you next round.
We'll see you the next time. Maybe we'll get you on next season to talk about JV baseball or something else. Okay. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. This has been Genuine Emissions. Thanks for listening.